The Napoleonic Era, The Return of Napoleon's Ashes, The French Entourage Tour Continues. Well, after leaving the tomb area of St. Helena, the Joinville and the French entourage headed towards Longwood. And of course, there they found a just horrific scene of desolation. The farmer who had leased the house from the East India Company had installed within it a hugger-mugger, stables, piggery, granary, and farmyard. As a last straw, it was now raining, and Marchand had difficulty in dissipating the melancholy visible on all their faces by explaining that in the emperor's time, the house, small though it was well cared for and surrounded by greenery, pretty gardens, which gave it a certain charm. There was absolutely nothing to recall the past except a deal table, a register full of signatures, and some clumsy inscriptions. The Joinville went bareheaded into the first room, the one that had served as an antechamber and billiard room. The humidity had made the walls terrible. There was not a stick of furniture, merely the mark where a mirror had hung over the remains of a chimney piece. In the next room, where Napoleon had died, a threshing machine was stored. The floor was rotten. The torn wallpaper revealed stone and clay. Windows and doors were broken. Graffiti and dates covered every fragment of woodwork left intact. Feeling embarrassed, the English members of the party vanished discreetly, while the shattered Marchand poured out his recollections. "He lay there with his head turned this way," specified Bertrand. They were all picturing the emperor in the watches of the night, his elbow resting on the arm of his chair, turning the pages of a book of his legend in that room where soon his death rattle would be heard. Albin de Montalon would be drowsing on a sofa while the talk of wars, conquests, treaties, and reforms went on. "Are you asleep, madam? What time is it? Let's go to bed." One day he had gone to bed, and there never to get up again. The dining room and the library were now being used as a shed, and were cluttered with farm implements. The emperor's private rooms, his closet and bedroom, had had partitions removed and were doing duty as stables. The ground was covered with manure, and a manger stood in the place of a table where he had scribbled notes for dictation. Arthur Bertrand clenched his fists with rage. Everything that existed in the emperor's day has been so completely vanished that it is impossible not to think it must have been done on purpose. But if they wanted to destroy those mute but eloquent witnesses of his savage treatment, they should not have stopped at soiling these walls. They should have pulled them down. The gardens, once laid out with difficulty in the unproductive soil and lovingly tended by the servants, had disappeared too. No sunken alleys, no grotto, no Chinese pavilion, no arbor, but the everlasting sown in 1819 had spread all around the house and on the plateau, and their golden and green buds were at the point of bursting. The big ornamental pond, in the shape of a half moon, was still there, being used as a drinking trough, and one or two trees. Las Casas recognized one of them at the corner of the avenue. It was the one Napoleon was sitting on the day that Low came to arrest the author of the memorial with his own hand. The pavilions occupied by the Montalons, the Las Casas, Gourgaud, the priests, and doctor had been turned also into stables, and a hen house, and a pigsty. It still was raining when the French started back to Jamestown. At Hut's Gate, they found waiting for them the same Miss Mason, who had so often amused them by riding to meet them on a docile bullock, and the widow Dixon, who had been Arthur Bertrand's nurse. Their meeting was like a ray of sunlight. Gargaud smiled, and Arthur Bertrand shed a few tears. At the Briars, they saw the pavilion from the road. It was now occupied by Colonel Trelawney. Buried in its bushy gardens, the trellised arbor where Napoleon used to work, and the philosopher's alley where he paced with Las Casas at dusk. During dinner at the castle that evening, presided over by Colonel Trelawney in the governor's name, they were all lost in their memories. The band of La Belle Poulet played soft music, and the beau mood of the island forgot the past and enjoyed this elegant entertainment. Joinville returned to his ship late that night, while some of the officers preferred to be put up at Solomon's, where bed and board were provided, exactly as in 1815. The next day, the prince dined at Plantation House with Rohan Chabot, Bertrand, Gourgaud, and Las Casas. and they received guests on La Belle Poulet and honored the officers' mess at Jamestown with his presence. Nor did he escape the obligations of these crushing colonial formalities until the afternoon of Thursday the 13th, when he went off to make a drawing of the tomb and pay another visit to Longwood. The ship's crews made pilgrimages as well, and returned with their arms full of souvenirs, plants, flowers, fragments of wood, and bags of earth. The Emperor's companions visited various familiar places. Maldivia was still occupied by the Hodsons. Mount Pleasant by old Sir William Doveton, who was quite amazed by all the excitement over the exhumation of a man whom he treated informally, not even removing his hat in order to please Lowe. Marchand asked about Esther Vesey, the daughter of an English sergeant, who he would have married in 1817 had not the emperor objected. She unfortunately was dead, and the son she had borne him, James Octave, had been deported to the Cape for bad behavior. Now, at this point, it is getting close to the date for the exhumation of Napoleon's tomb, which will be done by the 91st Regiment, commanded by Lieutenant Barney. And he set out in the afternoon ahead of the hearse to get prepared. Well, next time, we will be exhuming Napoleon. That will not be an easy trick because it was very deep. You have a gigantic piece of stone over the top of it. Then you have dirt. Then you have a heavy concrete. Rubble, more dirt, and then you get to the coffin sitting on the stones in the base. It's going to take them more than 24 hours to break through all that, and it's pretty back-breaking work. But that is coming up. Now, the sources for this, The Last Journey by Martineau, Funeral d'Emperor Napoleon by Lange, The Cult de Napoleon by Louis Burberton, and The Second Funeral of Napoleon by Thackeray. This was a little short, but I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, which of course can be sent to you in any format that you would like, such as a USB stick. And thank you very much.